Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of GTI Insights, Global Taiwan Institute's policy podcast. My name is Marshall Reed, and I'm a program manager here with GTI.
And I'm Zoe Weaver-Lee, a program associate at GTI.
And today we're really thrilled to be joined by Dr. Germane Germaine Thiambiano, an assistant professor at National Sun Yat-sen University in Taiwan. At NSYU, he teaches classes on political economy, international institutions, and broader international relations with a focus on Taiwan and China's relations with African states. He's the author of dozens of publications, including his most recent book chapter, which was co-authored with Christina Karanska, How Taiwan Lost Africa and What the Future Holds for Its Last Remaining Alliance with Eswatini, published in Africa-China-Taiwan Relations, 1949-2020, which came out in 2022. Dr. Germane, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Marshall. Thanks, everyone, for having me here. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, Dr. Germane, I'm so glad you could join us to discuss what's a really fascinating and really often undercovered topic, which is Taiwan's relations with Africa. In recent years, there's really been plenty of coverage of China's growing investment in African states, which have really been a major target of the PRC's so-called Belt and Road Initiative. However, I think there's been relatively few observers that have noted that this rising Chinese influence in Africa has really come at the expense of Taiwan, which once had a really strong diplomatic presence on the continent. Now, after decades of defections, Taiwan has been left with only one formal ally in the region in Eswatini, which really leaves its ties to the continent more perilous than ever. With all this in mind, we're really excited to sit down and talk with you a bit about Taiwan's historical relations with African states, the growing role of the PRC, and what the future holds for all of these relationships. Oh, just to begin, we'd love to take a kind of broad look at Taiwan-Africa relations. It'd be great if you could give our listeners a good overview of how Taipei has historically approached African states and how that's evolved over time.
Okay, so if we look at Taiwan-Africa relations, we can go back to the 1960s when most African countries became independent. And during that time, many of them recognized Taiwan because most of the leaders in that time were anti-communist. So they did not like this idea of revolution, because revolution means their people will rise up against them and overthrow them. So China tried hard in the 60s and helped some countries to overthrow the governments. But most of African leaders wanted to stay in power, so they were not pro-com. They were not. They were mostly anti-communist. Hence their recognition of Taiwan. And some countries directly went towards China because their leaders were already very communist. So they had this idea for them, colonization was a kind of, you know, oppression. And they were very receptive to these anti-communism ideas. And so based on that, we can say like many countries in the 60s were, they went towards China because they thought China first was the only representative of, you know, they went towards Taiwan because they thought Taiwan was the only representative of, you know, the one China. And in the 1970s, when the U.S. started to kind of cool off its relations with Taiwan, it also led to a kind of domino effect where many countries in Africa also had a different perception of China. So many countries started to recognize China. And like Mao Zedong and many Chinese leaders said during that time, it is our African brothers that brought us to the United Nations. So many African countries voted for China to be into the UN, and Taiwan was asked to leave. But interestingly, Burkina Faso, my country, was among those African countries that were backing Taiwan. They did not vote for China to be in the UN. And so since the 60s, Taiwan has sent some, you know, technicians to help develop Africa. So most of them were in the area of agricultural development, because Africa was very agricultural based. The economy was based on agriculture. So many of them went to help grow rice, and also build some, you know, kind of basic infrastructures. And after that, in the late 70s, some countries moved to, most of African countries moved to recognize China. So Burkina Faso, also my country, before it recognized Taiwan from the 60s until the 70s, and after they switched to China. So many Taiwanese technicians, they left Africa and went back to China. And now in the 1980s, we saw like a wave of African countries going back towards Taiwan. So in the 90s, we saw like the Gambia, Burkina Faso, and also Senegal, where those countries started right to go to closer to Taiwan, and most of them severe ties with China. So we can say like Taiwan relation with Africa has been very tumultuous, like with like countries going back and forth, recognizing Taiwan, de-recognizing Taiwan, recognizing it again, and also de-recognize it for like many countries did in the last 7 to 8 years.
What's a great overview. I mean, it's clearly been something of a roller coaster for Taiwan and Africa over the past couple decades, with allies dropping away, then coming back, then dropping away once again. I know you've talked a bit about it so far, but I'd love to dig a little bit deeper into these switches away from Taiwan and switches to the PRC. What has really been behind this exodus away from Taiwan? Has it been purely economic concerns, or their broader political or diplomatic concerns? I'd love to just hear a bit more about that.
Yeah, I can say like in the 90s, because Lee Teng-hui, the Taiwanese president, started to be very assertive. So it wanted to push Taiwan towards, you know, the international stage. So we could see like it tried to increase its aid to many African countries to kind of, you know, attract them towards recognizing Taiwan. So during that time, Taiwan heavily invested in many of those countries in Africa. And also many countries faced in Africa, the 90s coincided with the end of communism and also Cold War, which means many African countries couldn't play Soviet Union against the West. So they were at a disadvantage because many Western countries asked many countries in Africa to first democratize. So there were many leaders were obliged to embrace democracy as a political system. And also the Bretton Woods institution, like the World Bank and the IMF, compelled many African countries to adopt strong economic policies that will kind of liberalize their economy. So many African countries were obliged to adopt structural adjustment policies. And these policies had detrimental effect on many countries, on many African countries' economy, especially Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger. And so after the 90s, Burkina Faso, for instance, was in a very difficult economic situation. So Taiwanese aid was for Burkina Faso, right? It was like a savior, right? So, but by investing heavily, giving a lot of aid to Burkina Faso, like it kind of attracted Burkina Faso to move towards Taiwan. And also it's because for the case of Burkina Faso, it's also because the country hasn't been a very important, you know, place in terms of, you know, economic investment or even geopolitical, you know, interest for China. So China wasn't very interested in Burkina Faso. It was rather interested in Mali and other countries. So that's why when the Chinese foreign minister once he visited most of African countries and he didn't come to Burkina Faso. So this really was like an insult to the president at that time, Blaise Compaoré. So Blaise Compaoré this was like an insult because Blaise Compaoré he enjoyed a very high status in Western Africa. So after the visit of the Chinese foreign minister, Bascom Power decided, right, to turn towards Taiwan. First of all, because of, you know, this attitude that he did not like from the Chinese foreign minister, and second, because Burkina Faso was in need of, you know, financial, it was in need of, you know, it was in need of, it needed something, needed money from Taiwan, and Taiwan was also willing, you know, to invest a lot during the, under Li Denghui, because they wanted to, Li Denghui wanted to be very assertive, try to make Taiwan visible at the international stage.
Well, thank you for synthesizing what is, I'm sure, such a diverse and complex, you know, story of histories in the region as it relates to Taiwan and China. And kind of on that, I'd like to ask specifically about the one country that has stuck by Taiwan, which is Eswatini. So, you know, why is this that Eswatini still maintains this allyship with Taiwan? And what has Taiwan done to maintain this relationship?
Eswatini, first of all, they say it's a monarchy, right? And many people, like, I've even asked some people from Eswatini, like, why Taiwan, why your country is still, you know, with Taiwan? First of all, they say it's based on their own interest, because Taiwan respond to what their needs of economic development, and since their independence, they've always been with Taiwan, and for them, Taiwan has always invested heavily in promoting their social economic development. Like, I've asked some student even here in Taiwan, I asked them, but why your country is still in connection, is still recognizing Taiwan? Some of them say it's because of education. Taiwan has invested a lot in education through the provision of scholarship to students to come in, different type of scholarship to, of course, people, Eswatini people to come and study in Taiwan, right? And also, so like, also some people say because Eswatini isn't a democratic country, right? So it's what the king said stands, right? So if the king decide to be with Taiwan, nobody can say otherwise.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more in depth about your home country, Burkina Faso, which has really been one of the more interesting cases in Africa when it comes to China and Taiwan. You mentioned already that the leadership at the time, a couple years back, felt sort of slighted by China's approach to Africa, felt that they were not getting the attention they deserved from Beijing, and so accordingly maintained their relationship with Taiwan. But then you see in 2018, Ouagadou changing and switching its allegiances from Taiwan to China, you know, one of the last countries in Africa besides Eswatini to make that switch. What was it that finally pushed Burkina Faso to make that switch? You know, what was it not getting from Taiwan that it could get from China?
I think there are many reasons. The first one is because Blaise Compaoré was overthrown by a popular uprising. He was in power for 27 years. And in 2014, people had enough. So there was like a popular uprising. So Blaise Compaoré's regime fell down. So Blaise Compaoré, he went to Ivory Coast, where he's in Azalea. And this is one reason. I know Blaise is very pro-Taiwan, so if Blaise Compaoré was the president, this would have never happened. And the second reason is that Burkina Faso now is victim of terrorist attack. It's like on a daily basis, like insecurity is a big problem on the country. And there is a joint military, I think it's a military association among West African countries that are facing terrorism, that are, you know, victim of terrorism. And China wanted to help, right, this group. It's a military command, West African military command. And it was established to fight terrorism. And most of the countries that, most of the countries on the region recognize China, and this military command asked for, you know, some support, financial support from many countries. So they asked from European Union and also countries individually, France, US, etc. But China was willing to invest, to give a lot of, you know, financial support to this military command. But the only China said it cannot give, it cannot support, it could not support this military command because there were some countries that were not in diplomatic ties with it. So under the pressure from, you know, the peer country, Burkina Faso leadership, you know, had to decide whether to be in the military command or be expelled, right? So in the end, the president decided to recognize China. And because why I say so, because in 2017, January 2017, when Burkina Faso wasn't, you know, when there were no, you know, terrorist attack, China offered, I think it was millions of dollars to the Burkinabe government to switch to Taiwan, but they refused. There are a lot of articles that even talked about it. They refused and say, no, we enjoy, we like our relation with Taiwan. We cherish our relation with Taiwan. And we know Taiwan is contributing to the socioeconomic development of people. Also in terms of technology transfer, you know, investment in education, right? Taiwan is the best option. So we could not understand why 1 year later, like, they will switch to China. So for me, the reason, the main reason is first insecurity and also the pressure that the Burkina Faso received from its peers. And also because Blaise Compaoré, a pro-Taiwan president, was overthrown through a popular uprising.
Well, that actually leads us really nicely into kind of the next section of our discussion here, because, you know, we would be remiss talking about Taiwan's aid to the region without talking about what you just mentioned, China's heavy investment to the region as well, right? So China's made headlines around the world because of its heavy investment in developing states and often is through this much publicized Belt and Road initiative. So how has this unfolded in Africa from your perspective? Like, what sorts of strategies has Beijing employed on the continent?
Like many countries in Africa were the fruit of colonization. And after colonization, most of them suffered from lack of, you know, the lack of infrastructure. And we know how important is infrastructure in a country's development. So many infrastructures in Africa date back to the colonial period, era. So when China came with, you know, its plan to build infrastructures that will, you know, foster, that will help many countries on the region to be part of the global economy, right? Many of them were very welcoming towards China. And also, I think the other reason is because China does not try to lecture them or to impose some conditionalities on, you know, before providing its aid, or if before interacting, before even engaging with African countries, there is no prerequisite. Like, we don't, China won't then, will not ask them to be democratic, right? To, or China will not mingle into what is happening between the leadership and its people. And I think many African, you know, many African leaders like, you know, this kind of interaction with China, because when we look at, you know, how, you know, their engagement with Europe or the West is, the West tries to kind of, you know, give that, not, I won't say impose, but the West will ask for some, you know, prerequisite, like, you should be democratic, transparency in how you manage your state affairs, etc. So many African leaders, most of them, I won't say all of them, most of them have this tendency for dictatorship, so they don't want to be lectured on, you know, those things of transparency, democracy, human rights. And if for them it's easy to, it's okay to look to have a partner which doesn't want to mingle into, you know, their internal policies, yes, they will go more, they will, right, yeah, they will choose that kind of partner. So that's my opinion. It's first of all because China doesn't try to, you know, lecture them, impose some conditionalities, and also because many countries in the region are in need of infrastructure. Many countries really need infrastructure. And we know infrastructures are very important in the development of countries.
Well, I'm really glad that you brought up the fact about, you know, the unconditionalities of when it comes to governance of China's investment, right? There's a saying, I don't know who said it first, but that China comes with a deal and the United States comes with a lecture. So I think that's very much what you're discussing here. But I kind of want to ask on that, you know, while that's kind of the appeal of the BRI, on the other side, you know, has it lived up to expectations? You know, among African states, have their hopes been met? And, you know, has China held up its end of the bargain?
I will say partly, you know, because there we have those infrastructures that are there and they can help some countries, right, to be part of global economy. Like if we look at even the 5G, right, with the development of those, you know, digital infrastructures, many African now are able to do digital marketing, right, to also use social media. And I think this is a positive thing. But the other part, some people talked about it, it's like some countries are now facing this issue of, to say, debt trap, right? They've been heavily indebted to China, and some of them, I don't know if it's a regret, like if I see in the news, right, people talk a lot about issues of debt trap, like where China built those infrastructures and, you know, people, the countries can't pay back, so they will have to, China will take over, you know, to see these infrastructures. So I can say partly, you know, part of Africa is happy because with these, you know, digital infrastructures, they are able to be part of the global economy. They're able to solve this issue of digital divide, right? Because Africa suffered a lot from the digital divide. But we also have those disadvantages, drawbacks, whereby many leaders who are very some authoritarian leaders use this technology to, first of all, you know, face recognition technology to kind of, you know, crush their political opponents.
Well, it is really interesting. You know, it's been fascinating watching how the Belt and Road Initiative has really unfolded in Africa and how African nations, as you've drawn attention to, have really responded to this and how they've signed on and really gained benefits from it. And I think that leads us into we'd like to close this conversation with really well, which is really the role for Taiwan in Africa now. You know, as you've painted a picture, there's not a lot of room for Taiwan in Africa. You've seen countries across the continent really satisfied with what they've gotten from China, with what they've gotten from the Belt and Road Initiative. So I'd like to hear from you, from your perspective, you know, what role can Taiwan play in African states? Are there things that Taiwan can provide that China cannot? And also, you know, something we're always curious about is the types of relationships that Taiwan can build even without formal relations. You know, what kinds of partnerships can Taipei forge with African states, even if they don't necessarily acknowledge Taiwan or formally recognize them? Is there a way that Taiwan can improve its position on the continent, or is it kind of a lost cause?
Yes, that's a very interesting question, because this is also what I've been doing researching recently. Like I always say, is Taiwan relevant in Africa? Like after only Eswatini, the remaining country that recognized Taiwan in the region, on the continent, I think Taiwan is still relevant. So I'll say how. Well, first of all, most of, you know, Taiwan has a very vibrant civil society, and through this civil society and also through these, you know, civil society organizations, Taiwan can connect with civil societies in Africa. And we know this is what is absent, you know, from the Chinese part, right? Civil society is not so important in China. So Taiwan can use its civil society has a soft power, right, to engage with African countries or African people, like through like a people to people diplomacy. So what, why I say so, once it was 3 years ago, I went with a Taiwanese civil society organization to Burkina Faso. And it was very interesting because in Africa, I think it's probably the stereotype. They don't know, they can't make the difference between China and Taiwan. So when we were discussing, when the civil society organization was discussing with the people, some people say, oh, you, the way you enter, the way you speak with us, the way you interact is different from other Chinese people. And they say, yeah, because they are Taiwanese, they are not Chinese. Right. So for me, my opinion is Taiwan is still relevant in Africa. And also because Taiwan has been in Burkina Faso and other countries for so many years, it still had its imprint. Like people still remember about this, remember Taiwan, etc. Probably the leaders have decided otherwise, but the people maybe not. So Taiwan, through its civil society, can, you know, try to engage with this African civil society. And I know now the issue, civil society is growing in Africa, and in many part of, you know, Africa, the civil society is very independent. So it's not controlled by the government, but we still have pro-government civil societies. But we have civil societies that are very independent, that criticize the government, that acts as a watchdog of the government. So Taiwan can, you know, use its vibrant civil society and interact, you know, engage with Africa.
Well, Dr. Germani, I think you've done a fantastic job of providing a huge amount of context on what's really a huge topic. It's clear that Taiwan really faces something of an uphill battle in Africa. You know, China has really consolidated its control in a lot of places. It's really exerting a huge amount of economic, political, diplomatic influence. And Taiwan has seen its position diminish. But I think you've done a great job of showing that, you know, there's still avenues for Taiwan to make inroads with African nations and build these sort of unofficial ties. And I think it's going to be really interesting to watch going forward how these relationships unfold. But I think you've provided us with a great basis of information. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was our pleasure.
Well, thank you to all our listeners for joining us for another episode of GTI Insights. Many thanks also to the great staff and interns at GTI for all their help with every step of producing this podcast. If you're interested in learning more about GTI, be sure to check out our website at globaltaiwan.org, where you can find information about our Global Taiwan Brief and our frequent public seminars. You can also listen to more episodes of GTI Insights on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Until next time, this has been GTI Insights.